Welcome back to Copper Country Today. I'm your host, Rick Allen. Joining me in studio right now is Dr. Michael McAllister. He's a general surgeon at Aspirus Keweenaw. Also in studio is Marlis Foley. She is a registered nurse and trauma coordinator, also from Aspirus Keweenaw. Welcome to the program.
Thank you very much for having us, sir.
I really appreciate you coming in. I know how busy your schedule has got to be as a general surgeon. I want to find a little bit more about that. What does your role entail?
Well, I am a general surgeon, which means that I handle all the kinds of things that you'd expect a general surgeon to handle, meaning hernias, gallbladder surgery, appendectomy, colon cancer screening and treatment. We're starting right now to make some headway into anti-reflux surgery and things of that nature. We're working very closely with another general surgeon in Iron River in that respect. But mainly I'm here to talk to you in terms of my capacity as the trauma program director at Aspirus Keweenaw with respect to injury prevention and the kinds of things that we see on a daily basis up there.
Are there, you guys doing anything different up there? Are you trying to bring in some new services or abilities up there?
Well, we actually have found that we have most of the services and abilities that we need to pursue a level 3 trauma site designation as we stand right now. What we've been working on is refining our protocols in the hospital and making sure that we are taking care of the trauma patient in a standardized way, in such a way that holds up to scrutiny from the state and hopefully get us our level 3 trauma site designation in the next few months.
What separates someone, a center that is a trauma center level 3 designated as opposed to one that's not or one that's below?
Okay. So a level 3 trauma center is some place that would maintain 24/7 access to general surgery, orthopedic surgery, and probably anesthesia services as well, and can provide the kind of broad spectrum imaging studies and services that you'd need to work up a typical trauma patient.
How has this effort to reach this designation changed the way you've done things?
Well, it's forced us to look at nearly every aspect of the hospital with respect to taking care of patients in the emergency room, getting them to the appropriate imaging study, and getting them to the operating room if necessary. And what that means is protocolizing the way that we see and initially treat and work up the trauma patient to make sure that we follow a formula, go ABC 1-2-3 from start to finish, do everything the same way every time so that things don't fall through the cracks. It's forced us to pay closer attention to our disposition or our decision-making time in the emergency room, because when it comes to trauma, especially trauma in a place like this where patients can come in with hypothermia and sometimes need to be immediately sent out, sometimes emergently, time is actually quite critical. So it's encouraged us to streamline everything, make everything more efficient and safe for the patient. One of the things that we just finished up with was revamping our massive transfusion protocol. That's something that the state of Michigan wanted us to look at very carefully. And we have worked with other more higher acuity trauma centers to develop our own massive transfusion protocol to handle the bleeding patient in a safer, more effective way.
How will this set Aspirus Keweenaw apart in terms of, how popular is it to have this designation, especially here in the UP?
Well, the impetus for going through the extra work necessary to pursue a level 3 trauma site designation has to do with the state legislature. There have been regulations that have been recently passed that dictate how and where EMS is allowed to bring a patient with an injury. You're supposed to bring an injured patient to the closest available trauma center. We have a competing hospital in town that I have a good relationship with all their surgeons, and we seem to work well together. But what's happened in a lot of communities in the state of Michigan with respect to this law is if there's a hospital down the street that's got a level 3 trauma designation, the other hospital has to do the same thing in order to keep up with respect to EMS traffic and ultimately hospital revenue. So that's part of the impetus to move forward with this, but the main thrust and the main purpose is to improve the way we take care of the trauma patient.
You talked a little bit about, you know, how it's causing you to focus on certain processes, but Aspire's keeping on, at least certainly locally here, is got a really good reputation of being a good hospital. So is it really a big difference as far as how you've been, you know, handling things in the past?
Well, with respect to certain aspects, yes, it has made a big difference. Without the impetus of going through the trauma verification process, we'd have no reason to look at certain things and have no reason to focus on certain things and improve in certain areas. But yes, we have had a good reputation, and that reputation is well deserved, but there are always areas for improvement, and the trauma verification process has allowed us to identify those areas and focus on them to make things even better.
As far as having a team together to make this possible, you know, who are the people that make Aspire Skibano eligible for this designation?
Well, our orthopedic team, Dr. Kelly, Dr. Rao, and more most recently Dr. Fearson, are a big part of that. Our anesthesia staff, our CRNAs that work full-time with us, as well as our locums coverage, myself and Dr. Nguyen, the other general surgeon, and probably most important with respect to the specifics of the trauma program is Marlis Foley, who handles basically everything with respect to the trauma program in terms of documentation and implementing the things that we discuss.
Now, I've interviewed a couple of those doctors that you've mentioned. I think most recently was Dr. Fearson, who was on this program. And, you know, it's a nice, impressive team. And you start talking about, when you start talking to individual doctors and finding out why they're there, what drives them, you know, why they're passionate about what they're doing. And it's not that our doctors are rock stars, you know. We don't put them on those kinds of pedestals, but we have an opportunity in this area where we get to know our doctors pretty one-on-one. You know, being a small area, you know, we only have a handful of you know, in your case, like in surgeons or even general family doctors. So we know our doctors pretty well, probably more than, you know, most areas would be able to boast. So let's get to know a little bit about Dr. McAllister. How long have you been at Aspire Skibano?
I'll be coming up on 3 years in July, I believe.
And what led you here?
Well, I was wrapping up my training in the Detroit area. I trained out of the St. John Health System down there. I was in the process of looking for a job. One of my classmates interviewed at most of the places that were looking for a surgeon in the state of Michigan. She happened to come up here. She loved the area. She wasn't able to take the job because of a conflict with her husband's career. And I was still looking for a job. She knew I wanted to be someplace with trees and rocks and water and nice people. And she said, you should go there. And here I am.
We have all of those in abundance. And if you had that, you wanted to go a place with lots of snow, you would have been in heaven pretty much. You have to go through so much school to become a medical doctor, and I believe probably a surgeon even more so. So how early on did you know that that's what you wanted to do?
Well, I made the decision to become a surgeon probably towards the end of my undergraduate college education. I was pursuing a degree in marine biology, and as I was getting towards the end of that, I decided that medicine would be a better fit for me. And kind of right off the bat, I saw myself doing general surgery, in the sense that a general surgeon is the person you call at 3:30 in the morning when things are very wrong and something needs to be fixed. We as surgeons have a unique privilege to be able to fix problems in a physical way and get very quick results. And it's very rewarding when everything comes together the right way and we can take care of someone's problem or alleviate someone's pain.
Is it at all different when you have a patient who is coming in for surgery? It's something that's medical or something that's scheduled as opposed to something that's traumatic. Somebody's coming in from an accident.
Well, we try not to let emotion color our decision-making process. We try to approach the trauma patient in a calm, level-headed way. There are certain differences, of course, in the sense that if a trauma patient needs surgery, you have to have the ability to get them on the operating room table in a hurry. And that is one of the things that the protocols and procedures for the trauma program help us with. Getting a patient on the table in a hurry. There's a different spectrum of the kinds of things that you do for a trauma patient versus a typical scheduled elective case. It requires a broader tool set in terms of what a surgeon's able to do. And it does add a little bit of variety in terms of our day-to-day work, and it lets us keep up to date with the newest things.
Yes, well, that was going to be my next question, with the newest things, because medical procedures are always changing. There's always advancements in technology. How do you keep up with it all?
Well, I try to keep one foot in the rest of the world. I try to escape from this area, as nice as it is, at least twice a year to attend various conferences that are offered, and I try to keep in touch with my trainers and peers in more metropolitan areas so that we can continue to offer the most up-to-date care here. And we're actually doing some very specific things in that respect over the next few months to offer some new services and start to promote some services that we've been offering for a little while in a more effective way.
In comparison to other places that you've practiced, how would you rate the team that you work with and your support staff?
Our team here is exceptional. We have a small team that is very motivated to take care of the patient. You kind of alluded to the community of this area. That, I've found, makes a big difference in terms of the way we treat people and the way we take care of our patients. You tend to look after your neighbor better than you would somebody you've never met in your life. Maybe it shouldn't always be that way, but at least we have that kind of an attitude going into patient care. These are our neighbors. These are people we know. These are our family members, and we need to take good care of them.
That is so true, and not only in the field of medicine, but you know, most people who work with other members of the public, myself included, yes, I can understand that. You're going to run into these people at the supermarket or at a the high school game or something like that, and you don't want to be the person that didn't do them well, or at least didn't live up to expectations. You want them to be happy to see you and appreciate the work that you've done. Now, I know let me ask you this. How do you unwind, because your job's got to be pretty stressful?
That's a good question. I don't know if I really do. Really? I kind of stay wound up all the time.
So. We like to think of our doctors as being always ready, just like a law enforcement or something. You don't ever take any time off.
Well, I am supposed to, but I haven't.
That's good. One last question on the Trauma Center Level 3 application. Okay, what else has to happen to make this a reality?
Well, we've basically made everything happen. We are just waiting on the site visit from the people from the state of Michigan. We've been working very closely with key people, predominantly in Detroit. The director of the statewide trauma service is a trainer of mine from residency, and I've been working with him very closely to make sure that we do everything that we need to do to have success with this endeavor.
Is there a time frame or ETN when you expect to hear?
When did we say?
We sent our application at the beginning of April, and hopefully within 30 or 90 days, after 90 days, they'll review us. So we're thinking probably the beginning of August.
Okay.
Will be reviewed.
All right. Talking right now with Dr. Michael McAllister. He's a general surgeon at Aspirus Keweenaw. That lovely voice you just heard a moment ago is Marlis Foley. She is she's a registered nurse and trauma coordinator at Aspirus Keweenaw. We're talking right now, we've been talking about the Trauma Center Level 3 application and sort of the process to get Aspirus Keweenaw up to that level and get that designation. We also want to talk a little bit about injury prevention. I believe, I've been promised by my weatherman that at one point there will be no more snow this year. We're going to spend a lot more time outdoors, and I guess that'd be a good general question for somebody that's been practicing surgery in this area. Do you find things are more busy, or on trauma-wise during the winter or during the summer months here?
Well, we definitely have peaks, and the peaks are about of equal intensity. We have one wintertime peak and one summertime peak. I think our peak in the winter is between the months of January and February, and that has to do with snowmobile and tourism related to snowmobiles. We have a lot of visitors from downstate and other parts of the country who come to enjoy the exceptional amount of snow that we receive over the winter, and there is no doubt that that kind of activity brings more trauma than you'd expect for a community of this size. So we have a peak in the winter time with respect to that, also with skiing accidents and slip and fall on ice and things of that nature. With the weather warming up and summer approaching, we are looking forward to more bicycle-related injury, more motorcycle-related injury, and the big peak seems to come around the time of the Copperman Triathlon, when we see a lot of people coming in emergently in ambulances from Copper Harbor who can sometimes have pretty significant injuries relating to falls on the trails.
Because they're training for that?
Perhaps from that, or I don't know. What do you think?
Probably training and also from the event themselves. We do see some during the event.
Okay, well, they don't call it Copperman for nothing. It takes a lot of effort, a lot of training, and there's risk involved when you're doing that. But not just doing that; it was in general just being outside and doing some normal things. A number of years ago, my wife was injured when we went out for a bike ride, and we grew up in the generation we wear bike helmets. You never even thought about it. And of course, my daughter was wearing a bike helmet pretty much her whole time on a bike. But we're adults; we're invincible. So we just go out for a casual back street bike ride, and in a fluke accident, one tire hit another, and she went down face first. And and to this day, it's not recovered. And first thing that they asked is when we got to the hospital is, did she have a helmet on? Would it have saved everything? Probably not, but it couldn't have hurt either. But we think that simple outdoor recreation like that, while we're not doing anything crazy, we're not jumping, we're not going on the Brockway Mountain Trail, so we're perfectly fine. And yet probably you may see more accidents in those situations where you don't expect to get hurt than you probably do when you're doing a little bit more of the extreme stuff.
That's absolutely true. And you brought up Brockway Mountain, and we had a very significant injury that occurred on that road on a patient who I believe was not wearing a helmet and may have been on anticoagulant medications, and he unfortunately did not do well. So one of the reasons we wanted to talk to you today, as you alluded to, was to focus a little bit on injury prevention, and as you also alluded to, wearing a helmet. That is one of the most important things that people can do as they're out on the trails to help prevent skull fracture and brain injury. But some other important things I think would be to be familiar with the trail that you're on and the difficulty level, and just make sure that you know what's coming. And do your best to be careful, and especially please wear a helmet.
In a situation where you wouldn't be wearing a helmet, like you're out on the water, do you see people coming in that have been injured because they've been boating or skiing?
I really have not seen as many water skiing or boating related injuries since I've been here. However, you're kind of suggesting about flotation device use, and that's also very, very critical and very, very important. That's something that I would certainly recommend that people always take into consideration when they're out on the water. Make sure you have the appropriate flotation devices available, and please use them.
Yeah, we don't see a lot of water skiers. We do see quite a few jet skis, though, especially on the inland lakes. And what kind of injury might you sustain when you're on one of those?
Well, typically that would involve some sort of an orthopedic or bone injury. I think we've only had one jet ski injury since I've been here. It's not a common thing that we tend to see, but I would think it would typically involve striking some kind of a stationary object out on the water, like a buoy or something like that.
I've never been on a jet ski, and I've also never been on a motorcycle, so I don't have a very good I guess, basis for saying helmet or no helmet. I know that they have relaxed the helmet laws in Michigan. You could now ride without one. Talking from somebody that often has to deal with the consequences of somebody not wearing a helmet, what would be your recommendation?
Well, I ride or rode a motorcycle until I got here. I always made sure to wear a helmet. I always wore a full-face helmet. I've seen enough significant injury, like skull fracture, brain injury, facial injury, relating to motorcycle accidents that I can tell you I will never ride a motorcycle without a full-face helmet. And I would certainly recommend that to other people who are out enjoying the weather on their motorcycles, please do the same. A three-quarters helmet or something that doesn't cover the face offers some protection for the skull. It does not offer any protection to your face, your teeth, your eyes, your nose, anything like that. The safest thing to wear if you're going to choose to ride a motorcycle is a full-face helmet.
Of course, we're talking a lot about, you know, injuries that you might receive while you're out doing recreational sports, but one of the most traumatic things I'd ever saw was one time I was visiting a church office, and there was a young girl who was sitting there. Her mother was in the office talking with the pastor, and I was waiting to talk to him, and she was there, and she had her foot wrapped up. And I said, "Oh, honey, what happened to your foot?" Very young girl. She said, "Oh, my toes got cut off by the lawnmower." And boy, that traumatized me just because, you know, I have a little girl of my own. Here was I'm not sure that the mother was talking to the pastor of anything related, but, you know, this young child of probably, 5, 6 years old in that age, you know, very, very young, and sitting there with her foot, you know, wrapped up, and, you know, a permanent injury, you know, from something that would be as a freak accident as being having your foot ran over by a lawnmower. Now, I don't know what the circumstances that would be that caused it. I know that from that point on, neither one of my children, until my son was an adult, were ever allowed near the lawnmower, because I never wanted to have that happen. But certainly we have to be, you know, aware of things like chainsaws, lawnmowers, edge trimmers, especially some of the ones that have the big wire whip, like the one I've got. I love it. It works great, but I just wouldn't want to be edge trimming my own foot with it. But those kinds of things that could also, you know, creep up and get you when you least expect it.
That's absolutely true, and we have seen a few unfortunate cases like that, and it's hard to go back and analyze what should or should not be done, but as you can imagine, it's important to know where your kids are and what they're up to while you're out using that kind of equipment in the yard.
You know, I hope that I never have to find myself on your table, but it's nice to know that you're there in case I do. So I appreciate Dr. McAllister for coming in.
Well, thank you very much for having us, sir.
Cover Country Today, we'll be right back.